So good morning again. Today we're going to be reading from the continuation of that conversation. Do you remember who's speaking with who? Yeah, Narada Muni to Yudhishthir. So it's the next chapter that we did from yesterday. And the conversation continues, and he's the name of the chapter is really interesting. Prabhupada's English translation of the chapter name, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. So that made me think about the difference between regular, maybe non-civilized human beings and civilized human beings, right? There's like a distinction made there. So this chapter is all of those instructions that he gives to Yudhishthir about how to be a civilized person. And he talks about the differences between different types of brahmanas and more on like what grihastas and vanaprastas should do. And then he tells his own story. And I think that's going to be on Monday, maybe. We're going to do a verse from there, but he tells his story about how he perfected his life. So before I start today's verse, I want to share with you a challenging statement that shook up the early devotees of ISKCON. It was a statement that Srila Prabhupada made, and it created confusion and perplexity in the early devotees. The statement was, Guru is as good as God. And they were also new. They thought Prabhupada was saying, Guru is God, there's no difference. And in the introduction to this, you know how Prabhupada, I don't know where it stops, maybe the eighth canto, but he used to do these chapter summaries, right? And so in this chapter summary, he actually says, spiritual master is identical with Sri Krishna. So it's a very charged statement that could create confusion, right? So I want to ask you just to think about that statement. Guru is as good as God. Krishna is not. Guru is non-different from Krishna. And what that means, does that mean that spiritual master can lift Govardhan Hill? Does it mean that spiritual master never has to brush his teeth because he's always perfectly, you know, smelling fragrant like Krishna? Like, what does it really mean? And that's what we're going to discuss today, what that concept is. So the early devotees, they went to Prabhupada. They were all discussing among themselves, like Kirtananda, Hayagriva. And they asked Prabhupada, so you mean you're God? And then Prabhupada explained the difference. And so we will be hearing about that in today's verse. So text 27. Esha vai Bhagavan Sakshai Pradhana Purusheshvara Yogeshwarair Vim Vigyangrir Loko Yamanyate Nara. Let's read this together. The Supreme Personality of God and Lord Krishna is the master of all other living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyasa. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. And I want to, before we go to the purport, just tell you the context of this. The previous verses, Narada Muni, like I said, he's talking about what it means to be a civilized person. And he's talking about the importance of approaching a spiritual master. Then in the previous verse, it's actually really quite radical. He says the spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains that the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. So someone tell me what that means, the bathing of an elephant. Arjuna, you want to? Oh, I thought maybe you had your hand up.
The elephant takes a bath. The elephant takes a bath in like this pond or something. And then they're all clean and stuff. And then as soon as they get out, they just throw a bunch of dirt back on their back. So there was no point in them bathing in the first place.
Yeah. So he's saying here that the enlightenment of a person who just considers a spiritual master ordinary is exactly like that. That's what happens to them. They like supposedly all spiritual, but then they're continually putting on the dust of material consciousness. So let's do the purport for this verse, and you'll see how Prabhupada discusses the importance of the spiritual master. The example of Lord Krishna's being the Supreme Personality of Godhead is appropriate in regard to understanding the spiritual master. The spiritual master is called Sevaka Bhagavan, the servitor personality of Godhead. And Krishna is called Sevya Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is to be worshipped. The spiritual master is the worshipper God, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the worshipable God. This is the difference between the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So interesting, right? Worshipper God, worshipable God. Another point, Bhagavad Gita, which constitutes the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is presented by the spiritual master as it is without deviation. Therefore, the absolute truth is present in the spiritual master. So did you catch that? The fact that he's delivering it as it is gives him that potency, that the absolute truth is actually present within the spiritual master. As clearly stated in text 26, Gyana Deepa Prade, the Supreme Personality of God, it gives real knowledge to the entire world, and the spiritual master, as the representative of the Supreme Godhead, carries the message throughout the world. Therefore, on the absolute platform, there is no difference between the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If someone considers the Supreme Personality, Krishna or Lord Ramachandra, to be an ordinary human being, this does not mean that the Lord becomes an ordinary human being. Now listen to this. This is a very interesting statement he's about to make. Similarly, if the family members of the spiritual master, who is the bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, consider the spiritual master an ordinary human being, this does not mean that he becomes an ordinary human being. Interesting how he mentions family members, right? Spiritual master is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster in the disciples' Vedic studies and austerities. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Umiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Putale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nir Vishesha Shunvari Pashtata Vishtarani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garada Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Vanchakopa through this track of us and you'll be able to chat with the Dhamma Padma. So again, the opening statement that I presented with you with is this question. Spiritual master is as good as God. What does that mean? So I'm not sure exactly when Srila Prabhupada wrote this purport as far as like what year and what month. But in New Vrindavan in 1972, for his Vyasa Puja, it's actually quite a famous talk. And there's a short video of it that I was watching yesterday. And Prabhupada starts off his address. There's like a huge crowd of people in this pandal. And I guess there were relatives of the devotees maybe, or like guests who were there for the first time. So he said, I want to start off by explaining to all of you why I'm sitting on the seat so that the wrong idea is not, you know, given, like you're not thinking something wrong. So he said, like, externally, it may look like everyone's worshiping that, you know, a person externally might be looking like they're being worshiped as God. And then he explained that this is the etiquette for the disciple, that they, that is their responsibility to worship in that way. So he explains that the knowledge of how to perfect our life in this world is perfectly presented by Krishna. And he's in this, I'm talking about this little talk that he gave, right? So he said that but Krishna only comes every how many years? Do you know? Once in a day, Brahma. Yeah. So Prabhupada was saying here in that talk, he said, which is about 433 million years. That was the number he gave in his address. So yeah, so that's the 12 hours. Yeah, so every 12 hours of the Brahma's day. And so he was explained that, yes, this perfect philosophy is given by Krishna, but Krishna's only coming so rarely. So what are we to do? So therefore, there's the disciplic succession where this perfect knowledge is handed down to the next person, the next person. You know, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, there's that disciplic succession, you know, tree, whatever, the lineage. So I don't know if you realize this, but you can actually sing it to the melody of Samsara Dhavanaladi Loka. So we used to do that in Gurukul. Krishna Brahma Narada Vyasa Madhva Padmanava. You did it too? Some, no, okay. But yeah, it's so you could try it sometimes. It makes it more fun. I just wanted to share that because that's how I learned it. It's just with the music, right? The song. So that line is, and Prabhupada explained that when someone, who here has ever picked fruits, like actually from a tree? You have? You? Okay. What kinds of fruits were you picking? I don't even know that. Persimmon. Is that persimmon? Apples? Okay. Figs. Okay. Yeah, anything? Strawberries. Strawberries. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So there's been a lot of fruit picking. So Prabhupada explained that if there's a really, let's say it's a really tall tree and there's a really ripe fruit at the top, we don't want to just drop it down because that's going to completely ruin that fruit. We want to carefully hand it down. Right. So those of you who've done fruit picking, if you're, especially if you see the coconut pickers, right. The people in India and so on, they're like way up high and they're, it would just, if they just dropped it, it would just, you know, smash. And so that actually happened to my mom once in India. It didn't land on her head, but we were walking around Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house there and like around, and a coconut fell right in front of her, like, and smashed from like super high up. So that was like a close call there. But that's the effect of dropping the fruit or the item, is that it's going to be destroyed. So Prabhupada was saying the disciplic succession, somehow that's a tongue twister, that's the importance of the guru, that they hand it just as it is, carefully down through, you know, down to the bottom of the tree. So Prabhupada said, we, meaning him, he would often speak in this way, we are, right, like as in that multiple person. And then he said, we are delivering the same knowledge as Krishna. And then everybody in the audience goes, Jai Prabhupada, you know, it's like a very enthusiastic. And then he says, we don't manufacture knowledge. We're actually delivering it perfectly. So those were the points from that talk. And I wanted to share that with you because it's very similar to what we read in the purport, right? And so there was a period of time in ISKCON in 1970 where things got a bit rough with this idea of guru. And at first they had kind of swung to one extreme, kind of dismissing or diminishing Prabhupada's importance. And then it had swung to the other extreme. So, you know, if you're driving, who here drives a car or has ever driven a car? Most people, right? So, you know, like if you're suddenly you kind of hit a pothole and you're kind of swerving that way, you might overcorrect and like go to the other extreme, and it can actually like be really dangerous. So the overcorrection, what happened was then in 1970, some sannyasi started to explain that, you know, Prabhupada, they started to talk in a way that's actually Mayavad philosophy, which is saying Prabhupada is the same as God, like not, you know, is Krishna basically non-different. And so they were, and this was also New Vrindavan, interestingly, and it created a whole, just like confusion. There were some devotees who actually left. There was a whole history to that. And if you want to know more, you can look at the video, following Srila Prabhupada, the second part of it. They have the devotees share that story. So that was the other extreme. They swung to the other side, like Prabhupada is God. And Prabhupada actually left to India. He said there's some, he was very upset. He said there's like some poison that has entered our society where, you know, I don't know where this is coming from, but he did not like to be called God, of course. Neither did Lord Chaitanya, right? He would cover his ears. So that was the kind of history there. And so then here, and this is 2 years later when he spoke in New Vrindavan, and he had, you know, corrected the situation with the, he had those devotees were actually, you were mentioning Shruti on Monday, actually those devotees had left ISKCON or were basically kicked out of ISKCON. There was four of them. I mean, they were very sincere souls. They were they were just kind of sharing the wrong philosophy. So they were kicked out. And Krishna has his magic ways of working through that. So because of them, there's in the Radha Damodar Vilas, it's like a really big book, the history is given that because they were kicked out, then they actually, Indradumna Maharaj actually met them. And so I think sometimes how things happen for a special reason, like that we can't always understand. Yes, Nitai.
Yeah,
that's right. Was it Gargamuni?
Yeah.
Gargamuni. Yeah, right. One of them started Krishna Lunch. Yeah. Yes.
They're not really if that was given the opportunity to remedy by
Okay. Yeah. So they had like a task to do to rectify their behavior. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So the idea is that the God, that Guru is the representative of Krishna. Like, just imagine right now if we heard a knock on the door and it was the representative of the UF president. Let's say it was like his immediate secretary or his immediate like rep person, right? Knocking on the door. Like, we would all be like, oh, wow, the, you know, that, and be on our best behavior and care for that person, because we know that person's going to be like talking back to the UF president, and like, we're, you know, that our behavior will reflect back. So, and also another thing in British, when India was colonized by Britain, actually the king and queen, they didn't go visit. There was like a high risk of assassination stuff. A lot of people were very angry. So they would send over their viceroy. This was a person that they would send as a representative of them to go to India and like be speaking on their behalf. And that person was received with the respect of the king and queen. So that's just an example of the representative factor of that. And so then I want to talk about this. How do we get to this middle path, right? Because we have two extremes. One is to minimize the guru, and then one is to equate them with God or to overly elevate them, right? So in spiritual life, so often, I don't know if you've noticed this, but as you hear the philosophy more and more, there's this pattern that happens where we realize that it's not this extreme and it's not that extreme. It's something in the middle. It's something of bringing together these different conflicting things. Even in the scripture, right? We'll hear like this extreme, that extreme, and so on. So Prabhupada was very careful about rooting out impersonalism in this society. And one of the ways that we can be impersonal is to equate guru as God, exactly the same person. Because that's the impersonal philosophy. We're all one, it's all the same, right? Like, and I want to share something from this book, Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers. I'm curious who here has met the author. Raise your hand if you've met the author. Okay. You don't know you've met the author, maybe. So the author actually spoke yesterday. So his legal name is Bob Cohen, and his devotional name is Brahmatirtha Das. So he was the recipient of these wonderful answers from Srila Prabhupada. He asked very sincere questions, and then Prabhupada answered. I was just looking at this yesterday. I was thinking, gosh, this is like a kind of a contemporary version of Bhagavad Gita, really. It's like the inquiring student and then the transcendental knowledge imparted. It's very touching, this book. So in the context of the guru being separate from Krishna, not the same, I want to share something that Prabhupada said. So Bob asks, does the devotee who surrenders keep his individual taste for different things? Prabhupada, yes. Bob, does he keep his individual likes and dislikes? Prabhupada, yes, he keeps everything in full, but he gives preference to Krishna. Suppose I like something, but Krishna says, no, you cannot use it. Then I shall not use it. I give it up for Krishna's sake. Positively, Krishna says, I like these things. So we have to offer to Krishna what he likes, and then we take prasad. This is really sweet, so I'll just read a little more. Krishna likes Radharani. Therefore, all the gopis are trying to push Radharani to Krishna. Krishna likes this gopi. All right, push her forward to him. That is Krishna consciousness, to satisfy the senses of Krishna, not to satisfy my senses. So here he made a very important statement. He said that the devotee retains their individual likes and dislikes. They don't merge with Krishna. They're not becoming, every devotee has their own, every jiva, every soul has their own individual personhood, right? So he's saying that that remains even after we connect with Krishna, but we put our preferences to the side in order to please Krishna. So there's a checks and balances system, which really helps that us to understand the position of guru. And that is, what are the three parts of that system? Yeah, Kevin. Yeah. So we can understand who's a qualified guru if we're seeing that they speak according to Shastra, and if the other Vaishnavas are also in alignment. So, and then again, the other way around, if we read something in scripture, and then does it match up with the devotees? Does it match up with guru? Like it's a spiritual like triangle, right? Of that reminds me of Congress, anyway, checks and balances system. So I want to ask you, what happens if the spiritual master steps away from Krishna consciousness? Let's say someone gets initiated, and then that person has a little slip up and leaves. What happens to the disciple? Yes. And this has happened in ISKCON, which is why I asked the question.
The disciple still benefits because they followed the principle of serving the guru. So as long as the disciple is sincere and with the right intention has rendered service to the guru, and even if the guru falls down, the disciple still benefits.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really nice. I like how you said the principle of the guru, of worshiping guru, because guru is also a principle, like the idea of guru, like having that connection to Krishna through someone. And yes, any other thoughts on that question? Yes, Arjuna.
There's the Apichet Sudaratra verse, which says that even if a saintly person performs abominable activities, if he's rightly situated, he's still considered saintly. So the disciple, depending on the situation, could reject the guru or could still accept that, like, he had a slip up, but if the guru comes back to the service, then the disciple can also stay engaged in the service of the guru.
Yeah, it's a living process. So it's I like how you mentioned that verse. That's a very merciful verse that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, that even if one slips up, it's not the end of their spiritual journey. So thanks for bringing that up. Did you want to add anything or? Okay. Yes, Christina.
So fortunately, ISKCON has a multi-guru environment, which is kind of different because a lot of other spiritual communities, they just have kind of the one guru and everybody has to follow them. But ISKCON has like many qualified gurus. So if someone gets initiated and their guru steps away and like doesn't want to come back, then they can find another guru that they really feel at home with and get initiated again.
Yeah, good point. So that actually has happened, and many devotees have, especially in the 80s and 90s, there were some devotees who were in leadership and giving initiation who then left. And so many of those devotees took reinitiation. And some of them didn't officially take reinitiation, but the main point was that they found someone else to take shelter in, some shiksha guru, right? A person. So that's the wonderful thing about this movement, is that we have that resource of many many gurus, really, that there's several different types of gurus, but Shiksha gurus are going to be more multiple. We're going to have one Diksha guru, but then we're going to have, hopefully, many Shiksha gurus. I'll just share that when I was thinking about getting initiated, I was already in that process, and I had some fear come up in the process of this. The fear was that I would somehow be kind of put like in a clique or something like that, that I would somehow lose out on being close to the other Shiksha gurus who I had. There was kind of like, I felt like maybe I have to choose, and like it's one or, and kind of a loss. Like if I choose this one, I'm going to lose that one, because I had several devotees in my life who I was very inspired by. So I wanted to share that. I had spoken to the various Shiksha gurus who I had, this was, way back, and they had all said the same thing. Like, it doesn't matter if you get initiated by this other person, our connection is still there. It doesn't change that relationship. And I was a little immature, so I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to lose, my connection with so-and-so. But I realized that these spiritual relationships they go beyond like the physical proximity, even the amount of time we talk to the spiritual master. It goes beyond like time, place, and circumstance. And it's like really a spiritual relationship of the heart. So yeah, I wanted to share that in case any of you ever feel that that concern, like, oh no, if I get initiated by one person, I'm gonna be stuck in a certain, I don't know. I was afraid of cliques. I think maybe it's from school. I was afraid of cliques. And I love how in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada is emphasized as the founder acharya, because that way we don't have to have that kind of divide among us. Like we're all part of Prabhupada's family. So that's really a unifying factor. There's actually a book. It's called Srila Prabhupada as the Founder of Charya Viscon, and it was released by the GBC maybe like, I don't know, 10 years ago. Yeah, it's a small little paperback book. And it was to make the importance, to stress the importance of Prabhupada, to unite all of us. So now I want to just shift to thinking about the qualities of a guru. And I want to ask you all, you know how they have these lists, like seven principles of a highly effective person or whatever, these things, right? So I was just thinking, like, let's do a round of, let's do at least 10. What are the 10 key essential qualities, characteristics of a guru that is essential for someone to take initiation of that person? What are those? Let's just say them out, and I'll repeat it. Okay, fixed up devotee. Nice, yeah. So knows the Shastra and can convince someone of the conclusion of it. Yeah. Like how is their impact on the world? You can see that in how they touch people's lives. Yes. Control over the six types of urges, like in Upadeshamrita. Kamishi? Teaching by example. Okay. So we have, how many do we have now? Three. That was three or four. Yeah, Govinda. They have a guru. That's a really important one, right? So they're not just a floundering being, like coming up with their own idea of things, but that they're in this lineage, so we can trust what they're saying. Yeah. Arjuna, did you? Yeah, bona fide. What else would you want in a... that they what? So you said worship the deities. So some might be inclined towards that way. Some might be inclined towards other services. So they may or may not be directly worshiping the deities. But what else? They serve Krishna. Okay, that's a really big one. Did you say that? Free of material desire. Okay, and yeah, in the back. Follow instructions of their search master. Yeah. Okay. They think, yeah. So you think they can teach you something. Yeah. They've seen the truth. Yeah. You know how they have like cartoons where you have like the dollar signs in people's eyes, like bling bling, right? So the other way, the spiritual way would be like, they've seen the truth, and you can see it in someone's eyes, actually, that they've had that like kind of enlightened look in their eyes. So yeah. There was, in the early days of ISKCON, there was like a lot of very interesting people. And one of them said to Prabhupada, you know, I'm really getting a taste for chanting. I'm starting to see a bright light whenever I chant. And what did Prabhupada say?
I think it'll go away.
Yeah, it'll go away. He wasn't, Prabhupada wasn't like enthralled by characteristics of any of spiritual philosophy that had to do with like sentimental kind of like, oh, it just feels so nice. And oh, it just looks so bright. And wow, that person's walking, they have a light around them. Those are nice things if they enhance our spiritual journey, but they are not the qualification for what we look for in a spiritual master. So you know how, I mean, there are many devotees who have experienced that with Srila Prabhupada, that they'll say things like, oh, he looked like he wasn't walking on the ground, and, you know, he had a bright effulgence and all that. And so that's all really wonderful. It's not enough, though. Like, what really makes one a spiritual teacher is the things that you all just shared, is like, they're following the guru, they're following disciplic succession, and they're able to, I like what you said, Kevin, about able to affect the lives of others with the philosophy. That's really the impact of a guru. It's not whether they have like a bright light around their head, it's what they're doing with their life and how they're impacting people. So I want to, you know, it's really nice that we have this class, because tomorrow is the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada. So I was thinking, I kind of like when things work out like that, like the topic is lined up with what's coming up. So I wanted to, do you have that video, Nitai? So I want to, so we just talked about the qualities of a guru, right? And I want to share this beautiful song with you that Mangalananda Das Michael Cassidy, he's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He wrote it many years ago, probably in the 70s, and some of you probably know it. But it's a really nice meditation going into tomorrow about, it might be slow, or, yeah, we can... Okay. Yes, you can play it.
Kind, gentle soul, heart is never cold, so peaceful and poetic, with a message true and bold. He's never seeking praise, so silent and so brave. And his transcendental love is the magic in his ways. And when I see his love, I know I've got a long, long way to go. When will I taste the love that he is feeling inside? He's always meek and mild, warm and friendly smile, so simple in his living, singing all the while. He sings out Krishna's name, his glory and his fame, to serve his Lord and Master, the pleasure Lord in being. And when I see his love, I know I've got a long, long way to go. Where will I taste the love that he is?
life is ecstasy. He only dies to live. Living tries to give the happiness that's found in some Krishna's name. When I see the
love I know, I've got a long, long way to go.
And when I taste the love that he is feeling inside.
Isn't that such a touching song? One of the things that happens when we meet a great saintly person is that we become aware of like how far we have to go. And that's also a characteristic of Guru, is that they stir up humility in our hearts when we're in touch with them. And they draw out in us the best qualities, right? So it's really nice, that refrain of that song, like, when I see his love, I know what a long, long way I have to go. So that's the nature of Guru. So I wanted to share that with you. And I think I'll post that video or maybe you can post it in the WhatsApp group. So then tomorrow we can also listen to it. And I'll open up now for comments or questions. Yes.
You mentioned the transmission and disciplic succession is perfect in some form. And how does ISKCON respond to like an accusation by like another sect or branch where they say the transmission in ISKCON was not perfect? Like, is there, how would you like kind of frame that? Like, answer that accusation when they're saying, hey, our transmission is perfect and yours is not perfect. And I'm sure that happens in every kind of branch of guruship that isn't ISKCON.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that's discussed in that book that I mentioned that they put out. That was like a very, like many essays written by devotees of ISKCON explaining how it is that we're following purely Srila Prabhupada, you know, in this society. So I would have to like go through there and maybe share that with you. What comes to mind is that Srila Prabhupada showed by example what to do in his own life, like how he took the teachings of his spiritual master instruction of his spiritual master and followed it, made it his life mission. And so anyone who's doing that in that mood is following the mood of Srila Prabhupada. However, it also requires being in line with the philosophy of Srila Prabhupada, and that requires a really careful study of the books. One thing that I just slipped my mind. I was thinking of something and then there's been all kinds of different rifts and things, you know, different groups that will say like, oh, you're not fine, you know, and then they'll branch off and so on. But Prabhupada said, especially in his final days, he told the devotees that ISKCON is like his body. And so it was very important for him to see that unity of and the retaining of ISKCON, like the maintenance of it. So he didn't appreciate like splinter groups. He was still kind to those devotees and he did welcome them back if they wanted to come back. But he was very much wanting to emphasize a spiritual society. And that was very important to him. So that's a short nutshell answer. But if anyone wants to add, or yes.
So it's true that many different sects can challenge our transmission of knowledge and challenge the efficacy of it. And the test of any knowledge is in its application and its results. So the philosophy that we follow as presented by Srila Prabhupada and as taught to us in our lineage. The application of that process and philosophy the results are very tangible, it's very visible in the movement. You can see how big the movement is and how many lives and hearts have been transformed and still continues to grow as compared to any other sect that may challenge. So I guess that is also the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Yeah, I was just trying to think of that expression. Yeah.
Right.
So that's a really, thank you for sharing that. It's the proof is in the pudding is the expression. And it's a very scientific process too. So we do, like, if we apply it, then we will see the results as given, as Srila Prabhupada promised. And we can see that, we'll see that carried out in our own life.
George Harrison said, the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
Yeah. Did you have something, Gotamba? Onita, yeah.
Just thinking that also there's many translations of the Bhagavad Gita that were, in America before, but nobody became a devotee of Krishna until Prabhupada came and presented his Bhagavad Gita as it is. So that's in itself
a
transformative experience.
Yeah. No one else has ever done what Srila Prabhupada has done before. There was a great scholar, and I would have to get the actual, just recently there was a talk by this professor of religion, and he said that from what he understood, that Prabhupada did equivalent level to what like Jesus Christ did or what Muhammad did, like that level of impact. And I forget, do you remember the name of that? It was just recently at the 50th anniversary of so, and he wrote the books on Hare Krishna. He did a lot of research on the Hare Krishna. Thank you for saying that. Anything else? Any other? Yes, Anita and then Arjun.
I just think that if anyone like puts such a challenge, maybe someone new might get affected, but then we can invite them, like, come, like, study the books that are in our lineage and see if you're practicing that. And if you're an intelligent person, you can verify yourself. You don't have to listen to any like just statement in the internet or anything. You come and you can verify like how we're living our life. And if that's in the teaching and if that matches, then the knowledge is being transmitted.
Mm. Yeah. And stay away from the internet. That's a big one. I remember a devotee, like a few years ago, there was a new devotee and he was saying to me, like, I'm so confused about who to get initiated from, because I'm reading all these different things about these different, and every one of them has something online about them. And I told him to stay away from the internet because that's not going to help in spiritual life. Arjuna, then.
Question on, they say Vani over Vapu. So the instructions over like the presence of the spiritual master. And I was wondering, in Prabhupada's scenario, a lot of like very sincere, very advanced devotees like often never even like met him or had any association with him. So I was wondering, how important is it that they have like a direct relationship with their spiritual master? And can it just be Vani, or do we need the Vapu?
Yeah, we don't need the Vapu, actually. It's very helpful and it can instill faith, and like many devotees were, like you said, they didn't meet Prabhupada, or they met him once and they saw him from a distance. They were at the back of the room or and so on. And they never had a personal interaction, maybe. There's more of those devotees than the other way around, because Prabhupada had so many disciples, right? So there's more of that situation. But the way that they were impacted was by applying the philosophy of Prabhupada, the Vani, right? And taking that to heart. And actually that relationship then becomes a very deep and personal one that's, like I said earlier, it transcends time and distance. And you can actually be in the presence of your spiritual master even across the globe. You know, it can, doesn't matter if you're not, or even after they've passed away. So, Ashuti, yeah.
Not on that. It's true, because, and actually sometimes it's almost detrimental to have too much Vapu, the spiritual master, if
if it's taken lightly. Yeah, as you said, it's more important to follow the Vani and take it to heart. But going back to the previous question about other people saying that the transmission hasn't been proper, I was reflecting on how of a point in the Gaudiya history when transmission was, it was kind of broken, was when after Bhaktisiddhanta left and there was so much infighting in the Gaudiya Math. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking that if you see in any lineage, and if you see the devotees are working cooperatively and they're following their guru's mission, they're trying their best to follow its instructions and keep his mission going. Mm-hmm. Then that's also a reflection of that. Actually, you know, things are in order, and so I mean, it's calm for the most part. Everyone's still following Prabhupada and his instructions, and still implementing his mission. And also another thing is, I think somebody brought up, or maybe you brought up, that yeah, we do follow Prabhupada as the ISKCON founder Acharya, and that's why his instructions about big and small things are very important. And we don't want to be a fanatic and always keep saying Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that, but at the same time he did say it, so we shouldn't take it lightly. And but at the same time, we take it with, okay, why did he say it? What's the philosophy? So, yeah, if that's in the center, then, yeah, in the founder Acharya Sri Swishwara talks about it. If Prabhupada's in the center, then, yeah, if the lineage will continue more peacefully.
Thank you. Yeah, I was in Mayapur one time, and I was, the Guru Puja there, it's really big, and they'll have, all the men and all the ladies going and offering flowers and then kind of coming back. It's like this endless stream of devotees offering flowers. And I had that realization that for however many years, there's going to be like this line of devotees offering flowers to Srila Prabhupada. And that, what an amazing, incredible, evidence of his importance. To see that for centuries from now, people will be being impacted by Srila Prabhupada. And I just wanted to end on one note. Because it's the disappearance day tomorrow, Srila Prabhupada, I was thinking how the samadhi places of the great departed devotees are so powerful. Who here has been to a samadhi before? So that a samadhi is like the place where the body of the great saint is placed in the ground, and then it's a very spiritual experience being there and praying to them. And you can actually feel that connection from, they reciprocate, right, with our prayer. And so I wanted to just share one little anecdote. The Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan is actually I forget the exact name of it, but it's a kind of a Pushpa Samadhi, because some of the items of Srila Prabhupada that he had on his body when he left were placed into the right under, that center deity of the temple in New Vrindavan in the Palace of Gold, right underneath there, they had placed the items of Srila Prabhupada, like one of his teeth and some garlands and so on. So it's also a very sacred place. And I was there one summer and I was serving there and I was feeling Prabhupada's potency like all the time. So then one little mystical thing happened that I'll just share. So it was the end of the day. We would do these tours, right? And then at the end of the day, my friend called out, can you make sure the front door is locked so that no one else comes in? So I went to go lock the door. I had been listening to a lecture of Prabhupada and I had been ironing his clothes. And then I went to go lock the door and I came back and I took my headset back on. And in that lecture, the very first thing Srila Prabhupada said, he was talking and then he turned to say something to someone. You can tell he's like offhand comment. He said, "Are you sure the door is closed properly?" And it was just like one of those moments where I thought, wow, this is so, it gives a thrill because you feel like the potency of the great person being there. So, yeah, I looked around. No. Yeah. So I just wanted to share that. So thank you all. And I hope that, that we can have this meditation tomorrow about Srila Prabhupada and how we can be close with him even now, very, very deeply. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai.